And so I will begin again with the homage to the Buddha. Can't do that enough. And pay my respect to our original teacher. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So welcome again, everyone. My name is Ayadhammadipa, and I am very happy to be joining you here today. And today I want to talk a little bit about the topic of fear, actually. Topic of fear and what the Buddha offered us in terms of ways to meet that. And I want to start in particular by talking about, there's this phrase in English, American slang or American idioms, where we say, where there's smoke, there's fire. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And here in California and in much of the world, we are in the season of fire. We're beginning the season of fire again, and it's been an unusually dry year. It's been a year of very, very little rainfall. You notice that a lot up here in the mountains. Usually in winter retreat we'd have quite a bit more snow and rain than we did this year, and some folks are probably experiencing this very hot weather. Although, as Noam was mentioning, there in San Francisco, it's pretty moderate all the time, no matter how much heat we might be experiencing up here in the foothills of the Sierra. But there is this sense of beginning the fire season and of it being a dry period, and given how things went last year, when we had an unusually difficult fire season, a lot of fires and a lot of smoke. There's a sense perhaps of some foreboding or some dread or some concern about what might happen. So I just use this as an example. This may or may not be true about the place where you're living, but hopefully you can follow this thread a bit and relate it to your own situation. So I want to unpack this example. So here we are. It's 2021. In 2020, we had a situation in the summer where there was so much smoke that the skies were dark, even in the middle of the day. Do people remember that? Maybe some folks remember that. It was actually in much of the media across the country, photographs of how that was. And there was a lot of ash as well, and even when the skies cleared up enough that it wasn't dark, there was orange. We would wake up here at the Vihara, and my window faces to the east, so I would see the sunrise in these very orange skies. And so a lot of people at that time expressed a feeling of fear or a feeling of uneasiness, right? feeling of uneasiness or anxiety or concern. And so if we look at that in the framework of the five khandhas, so the framework of the five khandhas is one of the ways in which the Buddha described a human life. It's a way, it's one of the ways, the frameworks that the Buddha gave for how to be present skillfully with our bodies and minds. So just to recap what they are, so we've been covering different aspects of the Satipatthana, and the five khandhas come up as dhammas in the fourth foundation of mindfulness, among other places. There are actually, gosh, like over 200 suttas about the khandhas, discourses about the khandhas in the Samyutta Nikaya and the connected discourses as well. And so anyway, so they are rupa, which is form, usually understood as the body and things that emanate from the body, like heat or tears or waste, sweat, so on. Vedana, so vedana is feeling tone, right? Feeling tone. It's a like pre-verbal sense that a particular contact is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither of those two things. So either neutral or unable to discern something. That third category is a little, it's kind of in the middle between the two other valences. And then we have sanya, perception. And perception is like identifying a thing as a thing. So you have a contact and you see an object, the light of bounces off a particular object and meets your eye, and you see it and you think, oh, cat. That's, you know what it is. That's perception. Then sankhara. So sankhara is one that is understood in various ways, but Buddhist scholar Venerable Anālio makes the point that as far as we can see in the discourses, the Pali discourses, it really pretty much refers narrowly to volition, to choices and intention, rather than the whole bucket of all other mental phenomena. So just to choices and intention. And then finally, viññāṇa. So viññāṇa is consciousness. That's the fifth of the five khandhas, okay? So this feeling of uneasiness is a sanya, it's a perception. It's a perception of a mental state, a mental quality. And, or fear, same, right? It's a perception of a mental quality or a mental state. And it's those that perception is based on vedana, is based on this pre-verbal sense that we have, or feeling tone that we have about a contact. And in this case, it's about a contact of what? Of seeing or smelling smoke. Right, seeing a dark sky, or smelling the smoke, or seeing the soot, for example, feeling the soot on your skin, on your clothes, on your furniture. So that vedana is an unpleasant vedana, right? It's an unpleasant feeling tone, and that's why the corresponding perception is something that we find that we identify as unpleasant, this uneasiness or this fear. So that's the mechanics, if you will, some of the mechanics of how that happens. And the Buddha described contact very clearly. He describes contact as the coming together of the consciousness with a sense field. So that's why we did the meditation on the sense field just a moment, the sense fields just a moment ago. So you could begin to tune into where those points of contact are, right? Where those points of contact between the consciousness and the sense fields, and when those are happening, when there's some object in the sense field, right? So when there's a sound that hits your ear, and there's an awareness of the ear as a field of sensory perception, then That's contact, and there's a so-called ear consciousness that happens. And so this feeling of uneasiness that comes out of this unpleasant Vedana, out of this unpleasant tone, underlying tone, makes sense, right? Because the contact that's happening is actually inviting a response, right? Our most primitive sense, our most primitive mental response is one that knows that there's something wrong there, right? That negative feeling tone. When we see the dark skies in the middle of the day, so there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with us. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with how our minds are working or something wrong with our bodies if we feel uneasiness at that kind of contact, right? Because there is something actually in the environment that is inviting a response. It's an unsafe condition in the environment. And interestingly, that's one of the reasons why we're built that way, right? To be able to detect unsafe situations in our environment and then respond. So what does it invite? It invites a sankhara, right? A choice or an intentional response. When that perception of uneasiness comes up, it invites some kind of response, a volitional response. And so what are the things that we might have done last year when that was happening? So you might have worn a mask, you know. There are certain kinds of masks that are particularly helpful for the particulate matter of ash. Or you might have just stayed indoors and kept your windows closed. Or you might have an air filter of some sort, or turned on your air conditioning because that also has a filter in it, or any number of other responses to the physical conditions that were present, right? As best you can respond to the fear, the uneasiness, by making intentional choices about the environment in which that perception and in which that feeling tone is coming up, right? So there are things that you can do, perhaps. But then there's also the issue of inviting a response to the fear itself or to the uneasiness itself. So taking steps to address the mental state of fear. And what might some of those be? What might some of those be? So, one way to address fear is by attending to the body. Attending to the physical body and the body's way of expressing this fear that's coming up in the mind. So, tuning into that mind-body connection and actually being conscious of it, being aware of it, maybe doing some kind of physical activity that helps you become conscious of it. Like some qigong or some yoga, something that is responding to the nervous system. Working with that conscious awareness and slowing down, right? And bringing some conscious movement in a slow, thoughtful way. So it really is actually also developing the mindfulness of body, returning to the mindfulness of body. And I'm going to say more about that in a minute, but other things you might have done some journaling or some talking about it, some way of expressing in words what's happening with it. And why is this helpful? Well, one way that it's helpful is naming it, right? You're actually looking at the mental states that are present, at the causes and conditions, getting clear about it. It's a form of investigation, really, this way of responding to fear. And actually, even that capacity to see the uneasiness, to see the fear that's present, to see the causes and conditions and the process nature of it, to see the physical reasons for it and the physical embodied expression of it, all of those things are helpful in and of themselves. You know, when I was a chaplain, this was one of the things that was always the most mysterious to me. So I would be doing spiritual care in the hospital, and I would go into somebody's room, and they would, you know, maybe be experiencing a lot of pain, for example. They were having, you know, sometimes there are situations where the doctors are having trouble helping people control their pain in their body or respond to the pain in the body. And just coming into the room and having the person express what was happening and then mirroring that. Wow, it sounds like you're having a lot of pain. It sounds like you and the team are really struggling with how to respond to this. It sounds like it's really kind of overwhelming for you right now, or whatever the thing is. Just meeting it with that kind of clarity is compassion already. Because it's acknowledging the reality of the human experience, of the lived experience. And oftentimes, just that much, you would see it, right? A person would sigh, oh, you know? Or they would start to cry. You know? And the Buddha actually, interestingly, says something like that in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. In the first turning of the wheel, his very first, what early Buddhism understands to be the Buddha's first discourse, the Buddha says, there is the noble truth of suffering, of dukkha. So suffering is a shorthand for dukkha, right? And we could get more into what that means, what it is. But there is a noble truth of dukkha. And knowing that, seeing that, there was wisdom, there was light that arose in me. Even before it was perfected. Because then he goes on to say, and dukkha is to be understood. And then dukkha was fully understood. And then he says again, until I fully understood dukkha, the cause of dukkha, the cessation of dukkha, and the path to end dukkha, I did not declare myself fully free. But even well before that, at the very beginning, just knowing that there is dukkha was a kind of light, was a kind of wisdom, was a kind of opening for him. And in the same way for ourselves, it's a growth on the path, I propose. It's a maturing on the path to be able to face our own dukkha gently and with as much clarity and steadiness as we can muster. Not that we need to force ourselves. I'm not suggesting that you should force yourself to face a pain that you find completely overwhelming or that you don't have the tools to face. But to the extent that you can, keep doing that. Keep facing the dukkha. Keep making the effort to understand the dukkha. That is fundamental to the path. And then the sort of indirect response, one indirect response that we can take is karuna. So doing the meditation, the four Brahmaviharas, the four sort of sublime or divine abidings, and that has certainly been my experience of them, divine abidings, of loving kindness, metta, loving kindness, karuna, which is compassion, right? Mudita, which is empathetic joy, or some people call it sympathetic joy, and upekkha, equanimity. Yeah. So karuna is the wish for beings to be free from suffering, oneself and other beings, right? So karuna is also a kind of indirect way of responding to our fear and our anxiety and uneasiness. Right? It's a way of nourishing the heart and reminding ourselves of the intention for all beings to be safe, for all beings to be free from suffering as much as possible, and to abide in that knowing that there is suffering in the world. This is the real meaning of the one of the ways of understanding the true meaning of compassion, is there is it's an acknowledgement as distinct from metta. So metta is wishing beings well, but karuna has this particular flavor of acknowledging that there is suffering, and yet that we can meet it. That we can meet it with intentionality and with our kindness of heart and our intention. And when we bring that intention to life, that universal compassion to life in our hearts, then the world is changed because of the way that we are interacting with the world. So these are all ways that you might have responded last year. And I'm going to try to wrap it up here so that we have time for a few comments or questions at the end. But I just want to contrast that with the foreboding that might be happening with this year. Because that, in my mind, is a different dynamic. So you have that same fearful, uneasy perception, perhaps. And that uneasy perception is based again on a unpleasant vedana. But that unpleasant vedana is coming out of a different kind of contact. It's not coming out of a physical contact, it's coming out of a mental contact. And I can see Noam there pointing at his head. Yes, it's coming out of thoughts. It's not actually present in your environment, at least not yet, right? It's about thoughts meeting thoughts. Thoughts sparking other thoughts. So it's a different form of contact. And so that, we have to really be much more careful and discerning about that. Because I would suggest that contact, which is mind with mind, can be incredibly skillful and is actually tremendously uplifting and beneficial on the spiritual path. But it can also veer very off. It can be that we get very, very deeply entangled and out of touch with our environment and the reality of what's happening in our lives. So we have to be very much more discerning and more sensible about, okay, this is not inviting necessarily a sankhara, a volitional response. This might be inviting just an investigation. Let's just look first. Let's just look and see what the situation actually is in the mind, in this contact, in the environment. What's real here? What's really happening? So can something be done? Or do we choose simply not to react to that? So maybe something can be done. Here at Aloka Vihara, we had to take out all of the gardens around the house. We were asked by our fire insurer to have a 5-foot distance between the house and any vegetation whatsoever. So with the help of many volunteers, we have torn out the gardens and the juniper and all kinds of stuff that was around the house and putting down gravel instead. right? So there is one that was a skillful response to the actual situation of what's here and what we can do about it. But as regards the thoughts, you know, again, we have to be pretty discerning about this. Sometimes, oftentimes, just staying still with fear is the best thing to do. It seems difficult sometimes. It requires a lot of discipline. But I will read you just a very short passage from the Buddha about this. He says, this is from the Middle Length Discourses number 44, number 4. Majjhima Nikaya number 4. And it's called Fear and Dread, actually. And he said this. He said, while I dwelt there in these horrifying abodes such as the woodland shrines, the orchard shrines, so there were these places that he was scared of, literally the orchards and certain parts of the forest, the woods. He said, when I dwelt there, a wild animal would come up to me, or a peacock would knock off a branch, or the wind would rustle the leaves, and I thought, oh, what now if this is the fear and dread coming? And then I thought, why do I always dwell expecting fear and dread? What if I subdue that fear and dread while keeping the same posture that I am in when it comes upon me? While I walked, the fear and dread came upon me, and I neither stood nor sat nor lay down until I had subdued that fear. So he just kept walking. If fear was happening when he was walking, he just kept walking a little while to walk it off, so to speak. And he says, if fear came up when he was sitting, he didn't get up from sitting. He just stayed sitting for a while, and he just tried to be still with his fear. And because of that, then mindfulness became established in him, right? That's what happens when we stay still. Then we can be mindful and we can be more present with the conditions that are actually in front of us. And again, it's a discipline. It's a discipline. It can be quite difficult. I actually did a recording called Anxiety Response, an anxiety response meditation, which uses this principle of standing still and looking around and discerning about the environment. So if you all are interested in that, you can go to my website and have a look at it. It's very short. It's about a 9-minute, I think it is. Could be 12. Sorry, I'm not sure. I don't remember. It was a while ago that I recorded this, a few years ago. So we need to discern the mental state, be still with the mental state, be mindful of the mental state, and watch it, observe it, know that we have a choice about that. So I'm going to end now with reading you this beautiful poem by Wendell Berry, who also speaks about stillness in the face of fear, and then I'm going to open it up for questions and comments. So this is Wendell Berry's poem called The Peace of the Wild Things, which was a poem that came into my consciousness while I was doing hospice chaplaincy a number of years back, home hospice chaplaincy. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. Thank you for your attention, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.